Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. In From Goo to God, a science-based defense of creationism versus evolution, author Bruce R. Mattson explores and explains the idea of creationism as a natural and accurate means of describing how life came to be in this vast cosmos. He attempts to demonstrate this view by using science, a methodology commonly employed by atheists, to demonstrate that the clever designs of every creature must have been created or molded by some higher power, and that we are all excellent works of the Lord God. According to Bruce, almost every media mode, including children's textbooks, consider evolution an unquestioned fact. Bruce is an educator of 30 years, taught kindergarten through 8th grade, has also been a principal, athletic director, bus driver, football, basketball, and track coach. More importantly, Bruce is a survivor of stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. After 18 years of chemo and a month of radiation, Bruce was humbled to the core of his existence. Seeing his mortality, he made it his mission to let people know that they are so much more than fate byproducts of evolution. So Bruce wrote a book using science-based facts to expose evolution's faulty foundations and reveal how intelligent design throughout the universe leads us to a creator. And that book is From Goo to God, a science-based defense of creationism versus evolution. And author Bruce R. Mattson is our guest on This Week in America. Bruce, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate the opportunity.
An excellent job you did in writing this and explaining it from a science-based point of view. It makes us all think, anybody that's on the sort of sitting on the fence with this, suddenly they've got evidence presented that I think will make a lot of sense to them informing their thoughts. First, I want to talk about stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and the impact it had on you, and it was obviously a life changer on many levels. What was the impact? What was it like dealing with that?
Well, I've always been very healthy, and I was fortunate that for my first 22 years of work, I had never even called in sick. And all of a sudden, I started having horrible symptoms and things that were just making me quite ill. And to go from being a coach, being active,
yes,
to all of a sudden, I was brought to my knees. I wasn't able to work for 8.5 months. I had to start chemotherapy. That was... So that started in January of 2014. And it just, like you said in the intro, it brought me to my knees. It made me realize that, you know, number one, I need help. I had to go live with my parents. Think about how humbling that is. At the time, I was 49 years old. I couldn't take care of myself. I couldn't work. And so it made me realize that the things in life that are really important, faith, family, friends, that's what it's all about. You know, I think like a lot of people, I worried more about my title, moving up the ladder, how much money I made, how fancy my house was. And I realized when it comes down to, you know, your life could potentially be taken from you, that those things really aren't what matters. Again, faith, family, and friends is what it's all about.
Bruce R. Mattson is our guest on the program. If you're Googling, that's M-A-T-S-O-N. His website, very simple. His name, brucermattson.com. The book is From Goo to God. You'll find it wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual places. Bruce, what were the main reasons for writing the book? I touched very superficially in the beginning of the program on how this all came about. To take on this project, it not only is writing a book, it's doing research and making sure you're a teacher, an educator, that what you had was fact-based, was science-based. What were the main reasons in taking on this project?
Well, having gone through 18 rounds of chemo, I did get the cancer free. Then I had a relapse a couple of years later in 2018. A couple of lumps appeared, and I needed radiation for that. So it was really at that time where it hit me so strongly. Tomorrow's not promised to us. And there are things on my heart that I just thought, you know, about my faith I wanted to share. And having taught for many years, there were things that never sat right with me about evolution. All the textbooks talk about evolution as pretty much as a matter of fact. There is no other potential option for how origins of life. And as a Christian, it always bothered me that, well, how can evolution be true if there's a God? And I tried to justify in my mind that maybe God uses evolution. So I started to look and to research more deeply in 2018, and I started to find things that kind of blew my mind, that to realize that no, there's no, the foundation of evolution is just not there. And in my heart, I thought, people need to know this, especially the kids I teach. I thought, kids need to know the truth. And so that's kind of the catalyst of where the research started and why I did it.
It's interesting. You approach this from a novel viewpoint, trying to urge readers to adopt a receptive mindset and critically evaluate. Talk about that. You're just not saying, this is what I believe to be true, I think you should believe it too. You're really laying out the case and asking people to keep an open mind and then evaluate. Talk about the presentation, because it's so well done. It's like maybe a closing argument in a courtroom. You have it there. You've got all of the facts laid out. Talk about that approach, because it's so effective.
Well, people who believe in evolution or are not faith-based people typically say science doesn't go with religion. Science is independent of it. And the more I researched things, I found that science really validates our faith, because again, if God created everything, true science should lead us back to our creator and the things that he designed in our universe and our bodies and in all of life. So, and that's what I started to find, that this intelligent design and things that cannot be explained by natural processes. And there's a lot of evidence I'll share shortly that shows that it cannot have happened by natural processes as evolution requires.
Well, let's do that. Let's talk about some scientific peer-reviewed evidence that has been published to defend evolution.
Well, that's one thing that stunned me, absolutely stunned me. For scientists and doctors, researchers, the biggest thing is to have their research peer-reviewed and printed. And for something to be scientific, it has to be observable, measurable, consistently repeatable. And I was blown away by the fact no peer-reviewed science research has ever been presented in defense of evolution.
Amazing.
Or the natural origins of life, that life comes from non-life, which would be abiogenesis. Biogenesis would be life comes from life that is observable. We see that all around us. But there's no evidence that has ever been presented to show, again, evidence to demonstrate that evolution is true. So it's really, evolution really is a theory that doesn't have, that's unsubstantiated and doesn't have evidence to back it.
Our guest on the program is Bruce R. Mattson, M-A-T-S-O-N. His book is From Goo to God, A Science-Based Defense of Creationism versus Evolution. His background is as an educator, and the book is written in that fashion to give us the facts and ask us to keep an open mind and study those facts. And it will lead to what many people feel certainly is a very logical conclusion. It's laid out so well. And Bruce's website is brucermattson.com. Book available at Amazon, all the usual places. Link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Bruce, who are some of the scientists who don't believe evolution is true?
Again, this was amazing to me to find out people like Isaac Newton, Louis Pasteur, George Washington Carver, Wernher von Braun. And these two really blew me away. Einstein, Nikola Tesla, did not believe evolution is true. And as far as like von Braun, Einstein, they actually initially did not believe or was more on the side of evolution. But as they learned more and studied more and saw the intricacy of the cosmos and the design in all things, as Einstein said the more and more he learned, the more he believed in God. So that amazes me that our greatest minds, that, you know, Tesla and Einstein, don't buy evolution and don't believe it could happen.
It's fascinating. I have never heard that before, that and so much more excellent information in From Goo to God by Bruce R. Matson. Yes, go ahead.
I would like to add one more thing, too. A lot of people try to say, well, the majority of scientists believe in evolution. Well, number one, science isn't by majority. Like when Galileo said, no, the Earth goes around the sun, he was the only one, but he was right.
Yes.
You know, and there's a site that people want to, there's actually a site called A Descent from Darwinism, A Descent from Darwinism. You can Google, and there's over 1,000 doctors and professors that have signed a list, current people. It gives their position, their university or hospital, and their degree, and they do not believe in evolution. So it's not just a small minority of people. There are people out there that are well-educated, and they do not believe in evolution.
You mentioned Darwin. What were some of the things that Charles Darwin got wrong or possibly didn't know?
Well, again, he claimed that life came from non-life, from inorganic materials. So, and he thought the most basic cell was just a blob of like jelly, protoplasm, he called it, that it just was taking up space. Now, and again, he believed that even in the human body. Well, he didn't know that in the eukaryotic cell in the human body has 3 billion chromosomes. And if you wrote out the genetic code in English, it would take up 1,200 encyclopedia volumes. That's in one human eukaryotic cell.
Wow.
So he also didn't know that in some, like a single celled organism, like a bacteria, it has all these different organelles within it that carry out the life processes. I mean, because they can store food, they can use energy, they can move, you know, they expel waste, they can sense things in their environment, and all these things are coordinated together. Again, all these things are in the most simple, basic form of life, and he didn't know those existed. So, it's something that, again, with the technology of that day, had no clue, but his theory only can possibly work if you start from something really basic, fundamental, and it slowly grows. But the most basic single-celled organisms is quite sophisticated. And something else that he didn't know was, he always talked about the fossil record, in that there should be transitional forms as one thing evolves to another. And even he found, and it's true to this day, that there are no transitional forms, that a giraffe, fossilized giraffe, is just like today. A deer is just like today. All fossilized animals are the same today. They did not change. There are those transitional forms are not there. And I guess what frustrates me is, again, why in school? Because he even said that not finding these transitional forms is undoubtedly of the gravest nature. And he says, if we don't find them, my theory would absolutely break down. Well, why isn't that included in textbooks? I mean, it's not promoting religion or anything,
right?
But he had doubts. And again, these transitional fossils have not been found.
The book is full of science-based facts. The book is From Goo to God. Does radiometric dating support the millions of years required by evolution?
Well, let me first just talk about radiometric dating, what it does. Often what they do is they have elements that have a parent-daughter relationship, meaning all things slowly decay. Entropy is throughout the all things. And so some materials, the parent element will decay over time into what they call the daughter element. And it happens at a certain rate, a rate of decay. So that's what radiometric dating is measuring, the rate of decay. So is that rate reliable? Yes. But what scientists have had to do is come up with a formula using that rate as part of it. And they have had to decide, well, how much matter did they start with? You know, how long ago did this happen? So because scientists who kind of created these radiometric dating formulas believe that the Earth is about 1.5 billion years, that was their starting point. Now, again, is there observable evidence for that? Can they prove that? No, but the formula is designed that way. So a good example that I'd like to use just to show the how different they can work. One is a potassium argon. So potassium turns into argon over years. An element or a rock was tested with that test and came out to be 500 million years old. Okay. So then they did the same rock with the rubidium strontium test, and it came out to be 1.5 billion years old, which is as old as they claim the Earth is. Well, the difference between 1.5 billion and 500 million is 1 billion. So just in those two different tests, there's a billion years in difference. So either one is wrong, the other is wrong, both are wrong. There's something that's not quite right. Another great example is zircon is considered the oldest rock. So they believe they are 1.5 billion years old. But we know today that zircon gives off helium as it decays, and that's measurable. They know it's an exact science on how much it gives off, how quickly it gives it off. And using that decay rate of the helium release, scientists have come that zircon are about 6,000 years old compared to 1.5 billion years old. And even the fact that it was all samples of zircon still have helium in it, which it should not after many thousand years. Yes. All of that should have been expelled, but there's still helium in every sample. So how can that be if it's 1.5 billion years old? It just doesn't make sense. And then the gold standard nowadays is carbon-14 dating. Everybody tends to agree that it works, because all organic matter, I mean, anything that has lived, plant or animal, has carbon-14. And again, that decays at what they call a half-life of 5,730 years. So like if I had a sheet of paper and every 5,730 years, I tore it in half, eventually I'd get down to a piece so small, it'd get down to nothing. So carbon-14, if you do that, it pretty much goes away after 70,000 to 80,000 years. So, so one thing we have found, though, things like limestone, coal, petroleum, even diamonds, they say have to occur or formed over tens of millions of years, even hundreds of millions of years. They all have measurable carbon-14, every sample. So how can that be if they're that old? Because we know, because carbon-14, that rate is right, we know what the half-life is, can't be more than about 70,000 to 80,000 years old. So again, why isn't that in the textbooks? Because it's a fact.
Bruce R. Mattson, our guest on the program. His website is brucermattson.com. The book is From Goo to God, a science-based defense of creationism versus evolution. Time is going by so quickly. I need to ask you about this. Intelligent design, that's something we hear a lot of. What is intelligent design? And can you give some examples that we can understand?
Well, there's intelligent design in pretty much everything in the universe and in living things. A great example that people aren't aware of is bacteria have a whip-like tail that acts like a propeller. That's actually like a modern-day rotary motor. Under electron microscopes, they can actually see that the flagellum has a drive shaft, a rotor, a stator, bushing, U-joint, and the propeller. All the things that a rotary motor has, so including gears. So we're talking bacteria, and it's 1/20,000th of an inch in size. So you talk about nanotechnology. We don't even have, our best minds can't create a rotary motor that can be 1/20,000th of an inch. But bacteria have it. How can that be? Could that have happened by chance? Or is this not intelligently designed? And it can rotate up to about 10,000 revolutions a minute. Howard Berg from Harvard actually said it's the most efficient machine in the universe. You know, so that's amazing that a rotary motor is in bacteria. And some other things, like there's something called the cosmological constant. That's the rate of expansion of the universe. They say it's at the perfect rate in coordination with gravity, that if it was a fractionally faster, matter would have just scattered to the point it couldn't coalesce and create planets and things and the matter we need for life. If it was fractionally slower, everything would have collapsed down on itself and imploded. So the expansion of the universe, they say, is just at the perfect speed. So what are the odds of that? They say the nuclear force that bonds the nucleus, that it, and then even the positive negative charges around atoms, those links, they say, are just at the perfect charge, and that if they were fractionally weaker, fractionally smaller, and we're talking, they're saying, from a thousandth of a degree, that the materials necessary to form life, the complex compounds and molecules, could not form. And so again, so if we're talking about gravity with the cosmological constant, the forces that hold and bind atoms together, so these electromagnetic forces is what I was looking for.
Yes.
And nuclear forces are so finely tuned that, again, a fractional stronger, weaker, they say life could not exist, that the compounds and molecules that make up life could not have formed. So that kind of precision in my book, like I said, that's like the signature of the creator, because that couldn't happen by chance.
That book is From Goo to God by Bruce R. Mattson, our guest on the program. Why is modern DNA research evolution's most significant stumbling block?
All organisms, including single-celled organisms, have DNA, and that DNA controls the growth of every part of a cell, and also then gets them to connect and work together. So the problem for evolutionists, number one, is with something they call irreducible complexity. For the first living cell had to have been able to do all the life processes. It couldn't have been simpler. It had to be, again, have everything necessary for life. For instance, if a cell couldn't expel waste, it's going to explode. If it can't store food, well, it's going to die. So if it can't take in the nutrients it needs, it's not going to be able to make the food it needs. And a good example of that is, like, if the first cell was a euglena, which does photosynthesis to make its own food, that's an amazingly complex process,
yes.
Photosynthesis. So to say that first cell had that ability, it's like, well, what are the odds of that happening? It doesn't make sense, because we just learned, humans, to learn to harness solar power in the last 100 years, you know? So, and if the first cell was an amoeba, well, what did it eat? Just think about it. It's the first living thing. There was nothing to eat. There were no other vegetation, nothing there. What could it have eaten? So that doesn't make sense either. You know, but the bigger thing about DNA is, and we know today, even single-celled organisms have DNA that control all of their functions and growth. Where did the DNA come from? Who wrote the DNA? Because DNA doesn't occur naturally in non-living things. And the DNA code in a single-celled organism, in a bacteria, they say, would fill about 7 to 8 encyclopedia volumes. Again, for a human, ours fills about 1,200. For bacteria, 7 to 8 encyclopedia volumes.
Wow.
Well, how could that write itself? And that's required, because, again, how could the bacteria reproduce? It needs DNA. It needs the process. As we know, DNA makes duplicates of itself, and it splits and makes another copy. How could it know to do this? Again, so the DNA has to be present for it to reproduce, not only to build itself, its structure, but to reproduce itself. So who wrote that DNA code? And what force gave it life?
compelling evidence laid out, just like Bruce is talking, although he goes more topics, more into detail in his book, From Goo to God, Bruce R. Mattson. A couple minutes left in the program, a couple things I'm going to squeeze in here at the end of the program. Why are adaptations mistaken for evolution? Why does that happen?
Well, people, as their argument for evolution, say, well, things adapt, animals adapt, and that's a fact. You know, so like the size, shape, color of length of hair, color of things, shapes of like Darwin talked about the beaks of finches. Yeah, that's observable. But modern day geneticists have found that none of these adaptations can occur if it's not pre-programmed in the DNA code. So yes, there are pre-programmed adaptations within all living organisms, and certain. And the amazing thing about all living things, we and other things have this ability to sense internally and external conditions that can trigger certain genes to go off. So that's what that would be the adaptation we see. Again, so when certain conditions happen, that will trigger the growth. Could the genes have to be present to change the growth or color or shape that we see with an adaptation? So sometimes the word adaptation is kind of hijacked to say evolution. No, it's just showing the magnificence of the pre-programmed code that I believe our good Lord put into our all living things, that it just shows the intelligent design that's there.
Yes.
Because again, an adaptation is not going to occur that isn't already there and pre-programmed. So to me, that shows an intelligent designer. And, you know, that can't happen by chance.
What is your greatest hope or desire, outcome for writing this book? What do you hope the impact is on the reader?
Well, I hope, again, if people are open-minded and will look at the evidence, the scientific evidence about evolution, they'll find out we're not happenstance byproducts of evolution. It just didn't happen. I mean, this by chance stuff, it's not possible. And so I hope it will strengthen their faith. People have faith. Like I said, I had doubts thinking, well, how can evolution be true? And I also have faith. And so I had a conflict in my own heart about that. And so I found the more you look at the science, again, it's showing this intelligent design that cannot be explained by natural processes. And so I hope people, it'll not only strengthen their faith, but now they will have these science-based facts to share with other people who maybe aren't believers, and get them to see the truth. Again, using science, not promoting a religion, but using science to say, yeah, we have a creator, and look at this evidence. And so I guess that's one thing that has amazed me, is the science is really on our side for people of faith. And as the Lord said, for you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Well, I think people need to know the truth. And then, you know, to realize, no, we have more meaning. We're created in the image of God. We're not just happenstance people here,
yes.
Which makes our lives meaningless. And I just think that's sad. And again, it's all that's out there. Again, these facts, I just wish so much that these facts could be in the textbooks and be in the public square. And so people could make a decision seeing all the evidence, but our secular society doesn't show the evidence that goes against evolution. And so people don't have can't make a balanced decision. And sadly, evolution's kind of forced on us. And I just think people, it would free them if they knew the truth.
Well, you're advancing that knowledge in your book, From Goo to God. I want to end the program sort of where we began, talking about the impact that stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma had on you. How are you today? How is your health today?
I'm doing well today. I'm cancer-free now. Actually,
great.
It's been five years since later in 2018. And, you know, you never fully get past it. I mean, your energy levels and things, you know, you have, but I'm so blessed to be here. I was told in 2013, when I got diagnosed, that I would never work in a school again. But here I am now. I actually finished my career. I at the time, I had 22 years in the system. I got to 30. I retired last June. And now I'm still working as an athletic director. So to have recovered to that point when I was told my immune system will never be able to take working in a school again, to have done it, and I'm still here, still working hard, doing what I love, working with kids. So I'm truly blessed.
So glad to hear that. What a remarkable story on so many levels that Bruce has to tell. His book is From Goo to God, a Science-Based Defense of Creationism versus Evolution. I'd like to thank Reader's Magnet Self-Publishing and Marketing Company for arranging the interview today. Bruce, what's it been like working with Reader's Magnet and getting the word out there about the book, the very important word, the message that you have in your book?
They've been terrific. I mean, they've gotten me to be part of some book fairs to get my book known internationally, not just within the United States. And I've had people buy the book, for all around the world. And I've done podcasts from even, I had one out of Yugoslavia. So it's amazing how, yes, they've expanded the reach and the knowledge of what I've done so I can share my passion, share this word, share this truth. And so I'm grateful for the job they've done for me.
Well, and I'm so appreciative that they arranged our conversation today. The book is From Goo to God, a Science-Based Defense of Creationism versus Evolution. Bruce R. Matson, M-A-T-S-O-N, his website. Simple, his name, brucermatson.com. You'll find the book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual places. Link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Bruce, thank you so much for being with us on the program. I love the passion for the topic. I love everything you're saying is backed by science. It's such a very impressive case that you lay out for everybody. It's a must-read book, a welcome addition to any family's library, a book that you'll be referencing for many, many years to come. Thank you for being with us on the program. A pleasure to have you here. Glad to hear the health is doing great. Back in school, athletic director, successful life, successful author. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Rick. It was a pleasure.
It's great having you on the program. Our guest has been Bruce Matson. The book is From Goo to God, a Science-Based Defense of Creationism versus Evolution. Book available at Amazon, the usual places. Link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.